So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And today we're joined by Senior Editor Jess Condit. Hey, Jess.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad to have you, as always. And also our producer, Ben Elman, will be chiming in quite a bit during this episode.
I resent you for taking me out of my comfort zone.
I think you secretly like it, Ben. You like talking about
this stuff. We gotta put you on the spot. And yeah. Right now, listeners, and I assume just like us, you've probably been cooped up in your homes for at least a week, perhaps more. Over the past few episodes, we've kind of dealt with how the coronavirus pandemic is kind of reshaping the landscape of tech, of how we're working from home, and mm-hmm. how we're receiving, you know, medicine from home through telehealth.
Yep.
So we want to take a slightly more fun angle this week. We want to just talk about games, because I feel like for me and for a lot of people, games right now are the perfect escape from the hellscape of the real world. And also, you know, we're stuck at home. What else are we going to do? As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review, leave us a rating. All that stuff is really helpful. And if you have any questions, drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. So Jess, Sherlyn, Ben, I feel like there's only one game that's really the thing saving all of humanity at this moment. And I feel like this is really the moment. Animal Crossing was made for this era. Animal Crossing New Horizons just released on the Switch. I talked about it last week. I forced Sherlyn to play it because I knew this would be a game that would tick all of her obsessive boxes. How's it going for you, Sherlyn?
I hate you because, I mean, normally I already do, but like, I was resisting it because I was like, what do you mean all of my obsessive boxes? What do you mean all of my OCDs? Uh-huh. And then you were like, you have to do it. We're going to talk about it on the show. I was like, all right, well, I guess it's for work. So I installed it reluctantly.
Uh-huh.
And then I opened it and like started the setup. And then the next thing I knew, 5 hours had passed and I hadn't eaten or slept. Slept.
Uh-huh.
Except, and I've been weeding the shit out of my island for
don't
5 hours.
Don't say I don't know you and your tendencies, Sherlyn. Like, there you go. Like, and what is Animal Crossing? It is such a hard game to describe. Like, if you have not played it, it's like a social lifetime simulator. It's a game where you are a human entering a village that's populated by animals. You get a house and you just kind of live your life. You fish. You hunt for bugs, and it's just a weird life simulator. It's a game that you're meant to play a little bit every day. It's not like a game you can just like win, which I think for right now, just like having small little goals is super helpful. How's it shaping up for you, Sherlyn?
I take issue with the fact that you're like, you're supposed to only play it a little bit every day.
Because,
dude, the amount of time I've spent on this game, literally this morning I woke up and I was like, I checked my phone and I was like, I want to check my village or I check my island because that's what New Horizons is. And then we had to start recording. I didn't get to, and I'm itching right now as we're recording. My Switch is next to me and I'm like, I need to open up Animal Crossing. It's addictive. It don't, like, for some of us, we can get lost in it forever, I think.
That's what makes the game so perfect for right now. Like, it is something you can play for 5 minutes or for 5 hours, and it's the same kind of experience. I mean, we all need something to keep us entertained at home, so it works. Animal Crossing isn't my series specifically. I've tried so many times to get into it since the GameCube version. Maybe I'll try this one. I think I have to now.
You kind of have to, babe, so that you can come visit my island, I can visit yours, and then we can be friends. I think that, honestly, I think we should tell you all about my very first experience visiting another island, which happened to be the Vindress Island.
Oh, boy.
So we say islands a lot, right? In the past, like, with the very first series, I think the Vindra, you were saying it was more like a village style.
It was more villages, pre-established villages, whereas now you're, like, going in and, like, civilizing this uncharted territory, right?
Like a deserted island. Mm-hmm. And then this is, that's what the difference is with New Horizon. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, you're setting up a whole thing. And so one of my favorite things about it, and this is where it kind of brings people together, is that you with an online account or online Nintendo Online,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, the Switch Online account, yeah.
You can visit your friends, and that actually expands your game experience. But it's also a lot of fun because I went to Dev's Island. Do you want to tell them what you did, Dev?
This was also my first time doing multiplayer in this game. But yeah, Sherlyn took a seaplane over to my island, and as soon as she arrived, I had to disinfect her because the Rona. So I sprayed her with water just to make sure.
He okay? sprayed me with water, yeah. And then he took an axe at me. Which is like, yeah. And then we started dancing, and then I couldn't, as a visitor, I wasn't allowed to use my shovel or my axe. Otherwise, I would have been burying
his
dead ass body.
But then Sherlyn gave me some peaches, which are the native fruits of her island, and I gave her some cherries, the native fruits of my island. The good thing about the game is that it really rewards you for exploring, so you could sell exotic fruits for more than you can your local fruits, so... It's just things like that. Like, this is a game where, you know, you're slowly building up your village. It's always been a social experience, too. Used to be the highlight was, like, local multiplayer. Now with the Switch, Nintendo's finally, like, leaning a little more into, like, collaborative online play, which is very nice. And I think in this, in the era of social distancing, it is very nice to have a thing where you could just, like, go actually be social with somebody virtually, you know?
I will say that, like... you know, Jess was saying finally that Nintendo is adding this online thing. I will say that the experience still kind of is lacking, and Nintendo really isn't good at this, where, like, you have to press so many, like, steps, like, all the time, always. There's so many A.
You had to join my friend list, and then I had to send you an invite, and then you joined, and only after Sherlyn actually came to my island and I approved her could I request that Sherlyn be my best friend, and then Sherlyn had to accept that, and it's a whole... Yep. I get it, because Nintendo's very, very careful about online safety. Yeah. They've been more cautious than any other company, and maybe to their credit, because
with more children.
Yeah, look at what's happened with Facebook and YouTube and so many other platforms where, you know, these services don't care so much about how kids use them, and things have kind of gone to hell. Nintendo's always been really conservative. So other new things. This game is a lot more streamlined than any other Animal Crossing I played before. Like, you come into this game, you get a tent, you talk to Tom Nook, and, like, you have to, as usual, you're in debt to Tom Nook, this damn capitalistic raccoon.
You're a kidnapper,
yeah. Early on, though, you pay off your debt just by doing stuff, just by, like, talking to people, picking fruit, fishing on your island. You get these Nook miles. They're almost like achievement points for just like doing normal things in the game. So those are points you could use, pay off your initial debt, then you get a house, and then you have to actually pay that with money. And then, like, then the game is really starting, because then you have to, like, figure out, okay, I gotta make enough money to just, like, pay off this debt at some point. But also, there's no pressure. There's no, like, even though it's like I'm gonna end up being in another world where I'm being crushed by debt, there's no interest rate. There's no, like, forced payment. So you're kind of free to do whatever you want, pay it off if you want, or just, like, dick around on your island, you know? So I appreciate the freedom right now.
That's so funny that that's freedom. Like, that this it's is freedom. The game we want to play is this, this indentured servitude simulator. Like, okay, that's fine.
Okay.
I will say that Dev was totally right about my OCD, where, like, I feel like this game is the best exemplification of my OCD, where I, like, you know, immediately cleaned up all the weeds and immediately, like, killed all the bugs.
I did not expect that. I did not expect you to just start weeding like a damn robot, but okay, I should have.
Because it also, the other thing is that it makes money. And then, as, like, a financially responsible person, I kept paying off my debt first thing. So all I did was pay my debt.
Now
$20,000 in savings while I pay down this $90,000 loan on that thing.
This says much about all of us as people, like, how you approach this debt and everything.
Exactly.
But listen, so here's my experience with Sherlyn in games, right? Before Sherlyn got a Switch and started telling the entire world she got a Switch, we had traveled, you know, across the country for some things, like Microsoft Build. And I remember sitting behind Sherlyn on the plane and just being, what is this? What is this girl doing? She's just playing airplane games for friggin' 5 hours we get to Seattle, or until we get to, you know, San Francisco or something. And it was first hilarious, And then it just got to be kind of depressing and just really sad. And then Trillin was just like in her zone for the entire flight, just staring at the screen. So
look,
now there's a real game you can play, Trillin, that's not Tetris on your plane.
I am now proudly part of the hashtag flying with Switch crew.
Good.
But I will say that, like, I don't know what game you saw me play, but in previous episodes, in the one that Jess was on even, I talked about Plants vs. Zombies. And honestly, that's what really got me into games. Like, I don't hate on that, like, humble airplane monitor. Dude,
It's great for kids
what made me buy the Switch.
To get into games. It's certainly great. But I don't know how Sherlyn, like, it took you that long. Whatever. I'm only going to make fun of you so long. I'm glad you're kind of on board with this. Jess, so I know Animal Crossing is not quite up to your speed right now. What is helping you stay sane and calm in this environment?
Oh, just a nice romp through hell. Okay. Yeah, I've been playing Doom Eternal. Yeah.
That's like amazing. The direct opposite, actually.
It really is. We have the Animal Crossing fluffy, cute experience, and then we have the hellish, like bullet screaming landscape.
Pentagrams on Earth. Apparently, I've seen from some gameplay footage, like, it's just straight up, like, metal death imagery, right?
It's Doom. It's classic. Like, this is one of my favorite series. You know, while people were playing Animal Crossing on GameCube, like, my cousin had a GameCube with Animal Crossing, but I was watching my big brother play Doom on PC, sitting on the floor watching him play. You know, like, that's kind of where I was at. Well, I wasn't allowed to play, obviously.
What do you do in Doom? You go around shooting monsters.
So, Doom is just, it's like horde mode, basically. Just a bunch of really cool-looking demons are constantly coming at you. And in Doom Eternal, it's way more, like, parkour-based than, like, any of the other games I've played. Like, you have to swing and jump and climb in a way that you really didn't have to.
Describing as parkour-based is kind of hilarious, Jess. So, I love it. I love it. There's a lot of, like,
hell
movement,
parkour?
Right?
Yeah.
Hell parkour. Well,
and you're wearing this huge suit, like, it's classic Doom. Like, it makes no sense and it's fantastic. It's just, the soundtrack is incredible. It pumps you up.
So apparently there's a, like, glory kill kind of thing also where a big object is to stab demons with parts of themselves. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
So, like, some of the coolest moves you can do are glory kills. It's when you, like, you shoot one of the demons and they start flashing because they're hurt so much. And then you can just, like, rush at them. And and you basically, you get this, like, mini cutscene of you just destroying them in creative ways. And a lot of that is ripping off their own, like, tentacle and jamming it in their eye.
Lovely.
It's really cool.
Lovely. That was something that was in the 2016 Doom, right? Like, the first, like, major reboot of the series, which I remember really digging. Everyone, I think, was kind of blown away that game was so fun and irreverent because it is, the beginning of that game is just like Doom Guy. It's kind of hinting at this greater mythology around Doom Guy. Like, he's almost worshipped, but also you start the game off by, like, blowing up the thing that's giving you missions and just, like, flipping off the helpful AI advisor, I think, in that game. So how does this evolve Doom 2016?
So you actually remember the story of Doom, which is shocking. Because is there a story?
I remember the opening moments.
Dev remembers a lot of things. Dev remembers a lot of things.
I know, it's true. This is why we love him. This is good. This game actually has a legit story. There's a narrative happening. There are cutscenes with, like, you're fighting these specific, you know, demon gods and all this stuff. I couldn't tell you the story beats, though. Like,
cutscenes. Yeah, I don't want cutscenes in my Doom game. I've heard things, Jess. Like, can you give us a taste of, like, the? I hear you have a space castle. I hear, like, things just get wild. Yeah. Apparently,
I hear you blow a hole in the surface of Mars.
Ooh, I haven't done that yet. So I'm about halfway through right now.
Spoiler!
But it sounds great. Hey, I've watched a lot of it on Twitch too, so I'm into it. But yeah, it's epic. I mean, it's always been like you're literally in hell or, you know, hell on earth or something like that. And now it's just like, there are laser fire beams shooting into the sky. And yeah, you're in space part of the time for some reason. It's very, very cool.
As an aspiring gamer... can I play? So I can't play this on Switch, obviously.
You can play 2016 Doom on Switch, not this one, I think. Mm-hmm. Not yet.
Really? Yeah. Would you recommend that I play that? Okay. You mentioned just now, Jess, that the soundtrack of Doom Eternal you liked. That reminded me. I really love the soundtrack of Animal Crossing. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that the sound effects make it really feel like I'm on a deserted island. Not to deviate too far.
Well, yeah, the soundtrack is great too because, like, the opening theme is just like. ukulele and just like chill. It's super, it's like a saxophone.
But it's deeply relaxing.
All the sound effects, like I wrote about this in my review at Engadget, like they go straight up like ASMR, right? Like you're standing by trees and you're hearing wind rustling through leaves. You're hearing waves lapping on the shore, and just like sitting there and hearing the sounds of the game, I think are super soothing when as soon as you take off your headphones, you're hearing like the news or you're going on Twitter and it's not so relaxing. So yeah, Animal Crossing is the perfect escape.
Meanwhile, the whole vibe of Doom Eternal is just pulse-pounding action. In fact, I saw this guy on Reddit post a picture from his fitness tracker, and it showed his heart rate completely spike and stay spiked for, you know, however long he was playing the game. It was up in the, like, 120 BPM range, which is, like, light exercise.
See, this is the this is how we figure out the different types of people. You guys are playing a game to try to calm down. It's very soothing, has nice lapping waves, and I want something that matches my anxiety. Come get on my level, Doom. Come with me and make my heart beat even faster.
I'm down for that.
Yeah, I'm down for that. Honestly, I depending on my taste and how I feel every day, like I will vacillate between those two sides. This is the power of games, by the way. They can take you to a whole new world. They can make you feel something completely different. And I love games because, you know, I'm a movie fan too. I love movies. I love TV. But I don't, I'm not as engaged with those things. Like, they don't transport me in the way that a game does, because you're actually controlling a narrative. Something like Animal Crossing, you're building, you know, the story. You tell that how you want. Like, I had that experience with Sherlyn where, oh, Sherlyn's on my island now. What am I going to do? I gotta sanitize her because this is a global pandemic. I got to, like, you know, and that's, I don't have to do that, but I did that for fun. I showed Sherlyn my little house and everything.
Oh, my
and
God.
She judged my decor.
Devendra has such a weird taste in, you know, clothes, furnishing.
You didn't like my biker jacket and pleather pants?
Oh, that's cute. That sounds good.
Yeah. Sure. He was like a showman. He was,
Well, you know, I think now we have to take Doom Eternal's music and just put that over Animal Crossing. We need to swap their music.
That would be so good.
Give me some rustling leaves in Doom Eternal. That would be great.
Oh, man, that would be nice.
I would love to do that. The other great thing about Animal Crossing, you could just like, you could put whatever soundtrack you want, like, because it's such a chill game. Where I listen to podcasts while I'm doing that. I play completely other soundtracks. So we've talked about Animal Crossing and Doom Eternal, both actually which released on the same day. So it almost seems like fate to give us like these two options for surviving our quarantines and keeping ourselves sane. Sherlyn, do you have any other things? I feel like there's one game you won't shut up about.
I mean, this was because this was like the whole reason I got the Switch was it's Overcooked and Overcooked 2. And I'm that one crazy person who will play this multiplayer game single. Like, I'm one person controlling two characters. It's I think, a cross between Animal Crossing and the anxiety level of Doom Eternal.
It's just pure anxiety. It is cute anxiety. That's all.
It's pure anxiety, but it's also cute characters and interesting sounds and ASMR cooking sounds. And I love that. I mean, so basically, I think, if you don't know, Overcooked is where it's like a cooking sim, sort of, where you are chefs in the kitchen, and each chef that you control has a role to play, and you put together an order and serve it up as fast as possible, and there's challenging obstacles on the way and all of that stuff. I mean, I loved it, but I kind of... And to your point, Dev, like, watching a movie or watching a TV or whatever is great. Overcooked and Animal Crossing, I'll play for like 5 hours and look up and be like, yeah, no, it's seasons have changed outside my window. But then like watching TV, it's the opposite. It'll be like I put it on in the background and I'll do something else and five episodes have played on the TV and I've not realized it. So it's like the opposite experience. And I'm starting to get it now. Like, people game for a reason.
We game for a reason. Let me, I want to play an excerpt here from, this is a summary for Ian Bogost's book, Play Anything. And he is a academic. He writes about games and he writes about game theory and like a lot of different things. But his latest book, Play Anything, is about the idea of the importance of play. And I'm just going to read this bit. Play is what happens when we accept limitations, narrow our focus, and consequently have fun, which is also how to live a good life. Manipulating cards to make a poker hand is no different than treating chores and obligations as tools. by which we can discover new happiness, end quote. But I'm looking forward to reading the rest of this book because I've had this on my shelf for a while too. This just seems like a great point for us to, like, you know, take a step back and look at how games and playing can really make our lives better. Ben, I know there's something you wanted to mention as well.
Yeah, so I've been playing a game called City Skylines. It's not a new game by any stretch. It's really kind of a successor to SimCity. And I've tried to play SimCity a lot. Like, SimCity 2000 was a big thing for me when I was just getting into PC games as a young teen. But the thing is that I never had that much patience for it. It's a very slow kind of game. Like, my cities would always be janky. That would be really disappointing to me, especially as the son of a city planner. My dad does this for a living, and I can't do it at all. It's so disappointing. And so coming back to this has been really nice. One, because I have the patience for it now as an adult. And two, just because, like, now, because I want to focus on something that's not the news, that's not, like, the horrible world outside for several hours, I find that I have the patience for it. Now I'm just going to, I'm telling myself, okay, I'm going to unplug from the news, I'm going to sit down for 3 hours, and I'm going to do the city equivalent of gardening. Your job in that game is just to make everyone happy. And so I'm getting really into it. Last night I was like, oh, I'm going to put a high school there. Like, everyone's going to love this. I need to, like, figure out my trash collection situation. It's very zen and I like it a lot.
Do you have alternate site parking? I just want to know.
I don't know if I've unlocked that yet. Like, this
is a very New York thing. Yeah.
This is my first play through the game. And so you unlock certain things at certain times, and so, like, I didn't even have to worry about trash pickup until my city was a certain size, and then I unlocked the dump.
Ben, City Skylines sounds great, but have you heard the good word of Animal Crossing? Come to church.
Yeah, it's basically the same, but cuter.
I did get a Switch just recently. I got a Switch maybe, like, 2 to 3 weeks before any of this stuff started happening, and I'm so happy that I did, because, like, what else am I going to do? It's taken me off of Twitter in a really great way. Like, holy crap.
Yeah.
By the way,
I can't deal with Twitter anymore.
Mental health break for everybody. Yeah, get off Twitter, get off social media. Just, like, do other things. Read, watch movies, whatever. Ben, you picked the best time to get a Switch because apparently it is sold out everywhere.
Prices are insane.
Prices are insane. A friend of mine, after I've been telling him for months to get a Switch, decided this week is a time he wants to get one. And he was like, okay, guy, well, you're going to pay $400 for, you know, the normal Switch, which costs $300 plus, like, more accessories. And he had to wait a while to get delivered, too. So, yeah, if you have a Switch, consider yourselves lucky and keep an eye out for stock, people, because I feel like there is no better console to survive the apocalypse with right now.
So what you were saying about, like, playing City Skylines as a child reminded me that I was a gamer as a child, too. I did play Sim Cities.
Oh,
I did
there you
play,
go.
Yeah, various, like, Burger Island style games.
What? Come again?
No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
those, all the point and click room escape games.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would play those. I would play flash games. I would also play find the hidden object games. Mm-hmm. That's my entire childhood teenage years. Yeah.
And this is, like, the thing. Everyone, well, okay, not everyone. There's a sense that, like, video games are for a specific audience, right? Like, they're kind of closed off, walled off. It's a hostile environment. Right. Don't come in. But that's just not true. Most people nowadays, especially, have grown up playing games. Like, it's something like you just described, like, that totally counts. Like, you know the language of games because of that. So that's powerful. That's cool.
I've just never heard the title Burger Island. So
dude, look it up. I love Burger
Island. I'm looking it up now as Patty Melton, the new owner of the tropical island-based beach burger restaurant. You must grill burgers, cook fries, and blend milkshakes.
Yes.
Sherlyn, you just want games that translate work for you. Like, that's
or
again
become
and
food.
Again.
You've never not been playing Overcooked.
I've never not. It's true. I've been playing Overcooked since before Overcooked.
Oh, wow. I'm looking forward to seeing, like, in the future, like, if there's a VR version of Overcooked or something. Sure,
oh, my God.
Well, I guess there are already games like that. I forget the
name. Like Job Simulator.
There's already
Diner
one.
Dash.
Diner Dash, yeah.
Diner Dash is really good.
Let me talk about a couple other recommendations. The things that keep me sane, by the way, are just, like, I love me a good Metroidvania. And by Metroidvania, I mean a game that's very similar to, like, you know, Super Metroid and Symphony of the Night. Symphony of the Night is one of my favorite games of all time. And I'm sure I'm not alone in this.
It's one of the best games of all time.
Yeah, it's one of the best games, and also one of the most copied games, because, like, every other thing on Steam and other platforms, like, are basically following that format. And I understand, like, it's easy to get overwhelmed with all this stuff, but I love it when there's just, like, a good one. Like, it just scratches a really great itch of just, like, you're this character starting off with not many abilities, you get stronger over time, you unlock a map, and it just feels so fulfilling in a way that... Yeah, I just really appreciate it. So, what is it? I'm working my way through Bloodstained, which is the crowdfunded game from one of the folks behind Symphony of the Night. I'm also playing Ori, which I mentioned, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which is a much much better Metroidvania than the last Ori game, which I thought was just, it looked good, but the combat wasn't great. This one has, like, actual decent Symphony of the Night style combat. And I mentioned this, it honestly just functions a lot like Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight is one of my favorite games of the last decade because that game is so relaxing and chill, even though it's incredibly difficult. It looks fantastic. It's a fun thing to play on the Switch. It's running at 60 FPS on the Switch, so it's like one of the smoothest looking things you'll ever see on that platform. Jess, do you have any other, like, go-to comfort games for you in a time like this?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of Overwatch, as always. That's kind of my comfort game for now. I used to do a lot of League of Legends, but I need a new PC. So I put League of Legends on the back burner for now. So Overwatch has been my competitive. I really like playing a game with stakes. You know, I like knowing that.
Yeah.
It's still fun. I am ready for something else though, and Riot is working on its own team-based shooter. It kind of looks like Counter-Strike. Looks pretty cool. So I'm excited about that. But it's been Overwatch and Doom, and I want to do Luigi's Mansion 3 is my next one.
Oh. That's your chill, relaxing game. Yeah.
So Luigi's Mansion 3, Luigi's Tree. Mansion 3 reminds me, Super Smash Brothers is another game I've been playing lately, but that's also because my friends want to, like, fight me and they know I'm weak. easy target, you know what I mean? Like, good, yeah. But it also, another childhood game I used to play, Street Fighter. I used to play Street Fighter all the time with my brother on the computer. But yeah, Smash is basically that, so.
Yeah. I will say there's no better moment of just, like, walking into, in New York, we have a lot of barcades, which are just bars/arcades. And every one of them has to have, like, a classic Street Fighter machine.
Yes.
And I will tell you, like, yeah, Street Fighter 2, The World Warriors, is a formative game for me. Like, I spent a lot of time at my local Burger King where they would kick me out after I played a couple of matches. But that was, like, the first place I could play it. And then it was, like, an $80 cartridge on the Super Nintendo. It's crazy.
What's everyone's favorite Street Fighter player?
Chun-Li.
I would say that for me, but I actually like Blanka or Zangief a lot.
Blanka's good.
Yeah.
Blanka and Zangief, the character is not many people pick, so good job, Cher. Yeah.
I know.
Sharing some
love. Blanka's my favorite.
I have Hello Kitty version of Zangief. It's really cute. Really cute.
No.
Yeah.
Shilin's eyes just rolled back in her head. And
I need to see this.
I will.
Dev, what's yours?
I don't know if I have a favorite, but I am a lover of the, like, Ken and Ryu template. I just love, like, those core fighters and just, like, those moves. Yeah. Like, the Hadouken move, all the special moves, like, those characters taught me how those moves worked. And then those moves translate to things that still show up in other games. So even, like, freaking Bloodstained has, like, special weapon abilities if you do a Hadouken movement. And the game doesn't even explicitly say that. It's just, like, if you're somebody who grew up with games and grew up with Street Fighter, you kind of know this movement. Yeah. So, less Street Fighter.
I don't know if you guys saw recently, I added a link to this video in one of my stories, but there's this guy talking about the language of video games and how it can get ingrained in you as a child. And if it isn't, how hard it is to get into video games, you know, as an adult, and which is one reason a lot of women are like, I don't understand, because they weren't indoctrinated as children. They don't speak the language.
Saying things like level up or like KO and stuff like that? That sort of
language? Well, no, not even the words, like the actual just knowing that pressing A is usually going to jump or, you know, you can dash usually with this button, or if you see something glowing, you should try to hit it or attach yourself to it or, you know, like there are just certain unspoken things like the Hadouken that we just kind of understand. And it's hard for people to get past that as adults, I think. I mean, unless you find something that really draws you in, like Overcooked.
It's tough. It's tough. I will say, like, this is one big benefit of, like, mobile gaming, because then it is just a screen. It's just a touch screen. And let me tell you, like my daughter Sophia at like 10 months, she was up there like swiping and doing stuff because she knows if she touches the screen, something happens. And like the mechanics there are really easy for her to like understand. So all the kids growing up with touchscreens and everything, they're getting this stuff. They're being indoctrinated quickly. Our feature will be touchscreens and like manipulative gestures just like this. So also another Sophia story. She knows what remotes do. So she will like grab the Apple TV remote and just like point it at the TV and just like start hitting buttons and swiping things. But if she goes to another room, she will look for the remote and then either point it at the TV or like point it at other electronic objects. So she has put two and two together and she's learned so she can control this thing with this device.
That's
great.
Clever. That's very smart.
It's a magic wand for her.
It's a magic wand. It's perfect.
One thing about babies and technology, I've heard that people have been teaching their toddlers to be courteous, like nice to Alexa. Don't just yell at Alexa, say please and thank you. Think that's going to be something that you teach to Sophia?
Oh, most definitely. Because, listen, our future is going to be run by robots and robot companions. So I want her to be respectful of the robots because we've all seen the Animatrix feature of how, you know, society fell apart was because humanity got a little too full of itself, didn't respect the robots. Robots get angry. So, but no, I think in general, we want to teach her that to also... just be kind to objects in general. Like, you don't want her throwing things, not even robots, but like toys and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, be respectful, be nice. It's a very simple thing. I also have to mention another game I've been playing over the past week. Did you all know Valve, the company behind Half-Life, has finally released another Half-Life game? It's insane. Like 13 years after the end of Half-Life Episode 2, we've been waiting for it forever.
No, we haven't been waiting for this.
Thank
we
you,
have
Jess.
Not been. We have not been waiting for Half-Life, Alex. We have been waiting for Half-Life 2.
I will say, yeah, exactly. Okay, so, and Jess, I know you've got a lot of opinions on this topic because you wrote about it. What you wrote a piece for us?
Yeah.
Can you summarize?
Yeah. No, I honestly didn't think this was going to be that controversial, but apparently it is. I saw this as the logical conclusion to a lot of reporting I've done about Valve literally over like almost a decade. So Valve is given a free pass by a lot of players. Valve is held up as the epitome of what a game company should be, even though they, again, have not released a game in their most popular series in 13 years, and they haven't released a game in any series except for a card game based on Dota that everyone hated, and then they just released a new version of that game for some reason. I'm just saying, I love the story.
I love, Jess, that you're usually very calm and collected, but once we start talking about Valve, you turn into the YouTuber that we also love, like the ranting YouTuber. It's amazing. It's great. I reviewed Half-Life Alyx, which is the VR prequel to Half-Life 2. It is not the sequel a lot of people have been waiting for. So I can understand why you're frustrated, Jess. I'm frustrated. Nate Ingram is also very frustrated. He is like our resident Half-Life fanboy on the site. He wrote a piece, I think a year or two ago, about how he just kind of gave up waiting for new Half-Life. Well, let me tell you, Half-Life is back in VR form. And it is not quite, what everybody wanted. But I will say, after spending a week in the game and close to 15 hours of it, I'm close to the ending from what I can tell. Because one character was just like, you better get all your upgrades now because we're not coming back here. It is, to me, I think, a conceptual sequel. Like, the thing about Valve, and I'm not going to like mythologize them too much, but I think they've done a good job with the Half-Life games of, like, in general, pushing mediums forward, right? So the first Half-Life, I think, was like a landmark moment for unstructured narrative in games. There weren't cutscenes. You were controlling Gordon Freeman as, like, cinematic-esque moments were happening around you, and you were, like, a participant in that experience. And that's something that a lot of games do, but we haven't really talked about it much recently until like God of War was like, oh, we're going to do all this game in one long take, you know, and see how immersive that is. And that's the impact of Half-Life. Half-Life 2 was all about physics, and that probably doesn't sound super exciting, but that also kind of transformed the way we thought of 3D environments, because the gravity gun in that game kind of was something that similar things showed up in other games. The ability to interact with environments in 3D was a big deal after Half-Life 2. So now, like, okay, what do they do? After trying to go episodic with Half-Life 2, Episode 1 and 2, they just didn't have anywhere to go.
They've only had 13 years to think about it.
They've had 13 years to think about it. I've heard the excuses in interviews is that they didn't know how else to push it forward. You know, they didn't know, like, what mechanic, what thing they can build a story around. Otherwise, it would just be more Half-Life. And I don't know if that's what they didn't want. So on the one hand, like, I understand the frustration. I'm a frustrated gamer who still wants to see the conclusion to the Half-Life story. I'm also somebody who appreciates it when, you know, artists and creators can just, like, do what they want to. You know, like, there's something to, like, the rock star philosophy where they, like, yeah.
I have a
listen. Yeah, and you got feelings there, too. But they have, these are big companies. These are big, very successful developers. Whereas so many other developers are beholden to, like, bigger corporate structures, you know? So you're either a big, powerful, rich developer like Valve or Rockstar, you're one of the mid-range folks, like, beholden to the bigger corporations, or you're, like, an indie developer that has the freedom to kind of do whatever you want, but not the resources. So to me, as a player, seeing a company that just has literally limitless money, just, like, as much resources as they want, explore games and explore environments, I'm usually there for their, you know, for the journey. I will certainly criticize Valve. Like, I'm not a fan of card games. I don't like Dota. So I don't, most of the games they've produced over the past decade, I don't really care about. This one, though, I think it's more Half-Life. It is a good game. It's a great, like, it's well-written. I love the VR mechanics. The gravity gloves in it are just straight up magic. It's great. Like, you point your fingers at an object, you flick your wrist, it comes sailing towards you effortlessly, and you catch it with your hands.
What are you playing with?
I'm playing it on the Valve Index, which is the crazy $1,000 VR headset. It is the best way to play the game, which also made by Valve.
Is it standalone or is it room-based?
It's both. It's both. I don't really like room-based VR, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
I don't
want
to be walking around my room quite a bit, so I'm playing it standing up. You can also play it sitting down. But what's really great is that, you know, Valve is at least playing nice with everybody else. You can play this on the Oculus Quest. You can play this on the Oculus Rift. You can play it on Windows Mixed Reality headsets. Anything that supports Steam VR, also Valve's platform. But anything that supports that will play this game. And I thought that was kind of nice.
I do want to clarify, this is clear. This is clear in my story and in my video. It's not an entitlement thing. It's not like I really want to play Half-Life 3. Like, honestly, no, it's not. It's this idea that you compared Valve to Rockstar.
Yes.
Rockstar consistently updates Grand Theft Auto. They consistently release new games in Grand Theft Auto and their other series. Like, they haven't touched Bully in a while. But
consistently, but, like, with very, very long delays.
Not
right?
long, not like, 13 years.
Not 13 years, but compared to every other studio, compared to, like, getting a new Call of Duty every year.
No, but,
right?
Okay,
like, Rockstar
Activision's
is pretty
different.
Slow.
Activision is different, and Activision is in control.
Yes.
Rockstar is answering to 2K. Rockstar has investors that they have to, the parent company and investors, they have to tell what they're doing. They have to say, we're creating a new game because our players want it. Valve doesn't have that. Valve is a private company, blah, blah, blah. I love that they have... No, I'm serious. I love Valve.
Yeah.
I love that they have the resources to do whatever the hell they want. I want more companies like that, because when they do amazing things, when they do release a new game, they're fantastic games. Like you said, Half-Life Alyx, I do not doubt that it's an amazing game. I've seen a lot of gameplay. I'm really into it. My gripe with Valve is that yes, they do get a free pass, and it is always like, okay, they're doing the right thing. They're doing the right thing. Even though no player that's been asking for these games and these features, they're not getting these things.
Yes.
Like, Half-Life Alyx is contained to VR platforms, which is fine, but it's also indicative of where Valve wants players to be. This isn't exactly where players want to be. This is where Valve wants players to be, which is what they did with Half-Life 2. They made you have to install Steam in order to play Half-Life 2. And now you have to buy a VR headset in order to play Half-Life Alyx. This is Valve trying to make VR happen. And that's fine. That's fine. I don't know if it's viable, if it's actually in the best interest of consumers. I don't know if Valve is actually listening or if they even care about giving players anything that, like, I would love another Left 4 Dead, another Portal.
You sound like somebody at church, Jess, just like railing against God. Like,
why don't you listen to me?
Yeah, yeah. But that's what it sounds like. Why? I totally hear you.
No,
like
Valve, yeah.
Valve inhabits this really unique space. Listen, Steam prints money. Dota, a lot of their games print money. Yeah. So yeah, they can just do whatever the hell they want. I would hope like they start doing things. Here's the thing. Like, I don't want every company to just be kowtowing to what the consumer wants too, because that's not always good.
Of course not.
But there is a good balance there. There's certainly a good way for like Valve to like maybe figure out a way to move Half-Life forward that is more accessible to everybody. And this is how I ended my review. Like, Half-Life Alyx is a great game, but it is not Half-Life 3. It's not what gamers have been waiting for. And I really hope eventually we get that. I would love for more cool things to be happening in VR, but it takes companies to take some risks. And that's what this is. This is a big gamble. It's not going to make every gamer happy. I think as a game, it's very successful. And as a show off of like the immersiveness of VR, it is fantastic. But yeah, I understand your gripe, Jess. Like, it's totally the same. I get it.
Okay, yeah. Enough high-minded games talk. Headcrabs in VR, scary, yes or no?
Yes, headcrabs in VR are scary. Go look at our gaming, go look at my video review of it too, because there's a sequence where like one of the first headcrabs comes towards me. I'm just like, I'm not prepared. It is on my face. I'm shaking my head around. I'm moving my hands. It's a terrifying experience because like your field of vision is obscured by this giant sexually evocative crab mouth on your face. We know what you're doing, Valve. We know what you're all doing. Everyone saw H.R. Giger's stuff. Like, we get it. But it's on your face, and like the sound is positional, so it's also like surrounding you, so you can hear it like sucking your brains out. So that's fun. And then I learned to kill it though. And then like you could do things where like in VR, if it's coming at you and you grab it at the right moment, you could grab it out of the air. Just grab that sucker as it's trying to come to your face and shoot it and throw it against the wall. There is a sequence where you're facing off a blind enemy that has like super hearing capabilities. It's sort of like the nemesis in Resident Evil. It is this thing that will just like hear you and like come chasing after you. So you spend that entire sequence, like over an hour of the game, just like walking slowly through different areas, throwing bottles to distract this creature while you try to make noise to escape into another room. And it is
amazing.
It's amazing. And it's one of the best gameplay experiences I've ever had. Like, just leaning up against a virtual wall, throwing a bottle in a corner, hoping this damn monster named Jeff does not see me while I collect objects and like go do things. And like, yeah, it's an experience you just could not have in the same way on a flat screen. You could do it. You could design the sequence. It's been done with games like Amnesia, but it's not as effective and certainly not as scary. Like, talk about raising your heart rate when you can't see the world around you and all you see is like the hellscape of the Half-Life world. It's just so much more evocative. But I will say, playing a game with like a horrific pandemic quarantine zone is kind of a wild thing to be going through today. We were actually invited to go up to Seattle to play this game for like a demo, and we had to cancel our trip because of the actual pandemic we're facing in reality. So
I love what Valve does. I'm so happy that Half-Life Alyx exists. I honestly think we can demand more. I hate saying that to gamers.
More.
I'm so, oh God. But like, yeah, I think with Valve, maybe if we apply the same standard we apply to the rest of the industry to Valve, maybe there could be some pressure to get some stuff happening, but that's okay.
They're certainly not free from criticism. And also, thank you, Jess, for launching that editorial right before the review so that all the Valve readers can come yell at me too. It's fun. It's a great time.
You should see my timeline. Yeah, it's not great, man.
It's so great.
So I've been working on a guide to taking and filling out the census online. So this year, 2020, the U.S. is conducting its decennial, I guess, which mm-hmm. means every 10 years census, so census 2020. And this is the first time that you can do it over the phone and online, in addition to filling out the form and mailing it back, which is... It makes sense, because the last time we, you know, you guys had to do this was 2010.
Yeah.
And now 2020, clearly things have
moved on. Lots happened.
Yeah. Everyone has computers. Everyone should have a computer phone. If you don't, you still can do the good old paper and pen route, or call someone on the phone. It's still problematic. But the goal with the census is to get a good idea of the population. And so it's important that everyone do this. And it's also mandated by the Constitution, so you gotta so yeah, check that guide. It should be up by the time this podcast is up. I'm working on something else interesting that I don't want to like tell everyone about right now yet, because people steal ideas. But ooh. I will say that after my therapy guide was published, I got a lot of feedback, more from other mental health companies, which is pretty par for the course, but
they want attention, like, too. Okay,
yeah, they're like, look, you forgot about us. And but the thing is that that's what I kind of welcome this time around. Usually it's kind of like, ugh, people who like don't really need to be featured want their names in an article. This time around it's like other people really doing good stuff, like a company that just launched 2 days after the article went live, saying that they have free digital health check-ins, they have free group therapy sessions with licensed therapists. There are a lot of good options that I would like to talk about, but I do want to like assess them for myself before I mention names or give recommendations. But yeah, no, stay tuned, because maybe I'll have a good recommendation next time. But what have you been working on, Dev?
I just got in Dell's XPS 13. I talked about that around our CES time. The XPS 13 has always been my favorite ultra portable, like over the last couple of years. This new one just refines everything. Like, I feel like I've painted myself into a corner a bit,
because
I called last year's model the perfect ultra portable, and now it's like more perfect than perfect. So it's tough.
This is why we don't use superlatives. Yes, exactly.
You know, but it's so good. It's just so good. Keyboard's good. Screen's good. Not much bezel. It feels very light. It's powerful enough to play some like basic games, because Intel's 10th gen processors have better integrated graphics. So it's a really nice all around machine. So just kind of diving into that. The real question is how I record a video of that, because things are hard here in New York right now, folks. You know, we don't have a quarantine or a stay in place order, but that is the smartest thing to do, because right now New York is the hardest hit place by the coronavirus here in America. So
outside of New York, Jess, what's it like over in Arizona where you are?
It's actually, it probably feels similar to what you guys are going through. There's no shelter in place order, but everyone is staying home as much as possible. Mm-hmm. The streets look different. The stores are ransacked. Yeah.
What have you been working on amid all of that?
Oh, right. Work. So I'm working on some stuff with esports and how that's evolving under coronavirus. I might also be playing some Resident Evil 3. I don't know.
Nice.
Maybe.
Nice.
I would love to play that. I love the movie series.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Oh my God.
Love is a strong word. Love is a strong word for that series.
Let's just spend a minute on this. So I'm just like Willy Wonking, hand on my, you know, under my head. Shirley, let's talk about your love for the Resident Evil movie series.
Stop.
Oh my gosh.
I like the first one. I like zombies, all right? I like killing zombies. That's why Half-Life sounds like a good game to me. Doom sounded fun, but I don't like PC games that much, I guess. I don't know.
I do feel like eventually we'll be able to supercut all your bad zombie movie recommendations as a clip. So that'll be fun, because we were just talking about World War Z, too, which is like,
That's rough.
Rough movie.
It was a good romp. It was like, if you read the book and you had expectations for that movie, you hated the movie. And I did. I did for a really long time hate that movie.
But I had expectations as somebody who likes, you know, good movies. So.
Oh, stop. Yikes. Oh, yeah. Stop.
Let's talk about picks real quick. I want to throw a shout out to Mr. Robot season 4, the final season. I think this show started off really strong and had a lot of buzz early on. It just feels like conversation around Mr. Robot kind of fizzled out. But it's such a perfect, angry, like, anti-capitalist show that we kind of need right now. Season 2 is rough, but if you have not seen Mr. Robot, just go watch the pilot, because I think it is one of the best pilots ever made. It is just fantastic. I love the creator, Sam Ismail. Actually did an interview with him a couple years ago over at Engadget, so go check that out. But he's just a smart guy, and he's evolved into a really great director, too. He did Homecoming on Amazon, which was like an adaptation of that podcast. He has this great like style. Like, he's just very good with imagery right now, and his writing is super solid at this point. So Mr. Robot season 2 was not that great, but I think season 3 kind of course corrected, and season 4 just pushes things to like a crazy level. So I just finished the series. I think it's a perfect ending for these characters and for the show itself, and I'm glad it exists. So Mr. Robot's on USA. I think you can watch some of the earlier seasons on Amazon Prime right now. Also on Amazon, I've been checking out Tales from the Loop, the new series based on the art from Simon Stålenhag, and you've probably seen this shared around the internet. It is just like, you know, very quiet countryside imagery with sci-fi tints. So like, you'll see a giant robot, or you'll see huge buildings in the background or something. So this is an anthology series based on his imagery, not based on like the mythology he's written around that imagery. So I'm really digging it. We're going to have an interview with Nathaniel Halpern, the showrunner. And I believe it's premiering by the time you will be hearing this podcast. So check that out on Amazon Prime.
So my pick this week is somewhat of a rehammer home the point sort of situation, because you mentioned your zombie movie. You said you came after me for zombie show recommendations.
Yeah.
So you know what? Yeah. I'm going to tell you, Kingdom. Like, honestly, I finished season 2 recently this past week.
Didn't you just recommend Kingdom?
I did, and I want to I recommended season 1.
You're repeating your one good recommendation, so let's go.
Yeah,
let's
go. Stop. I'm going to find another good recommendation after this, but I want you to remember, Devendra, that I recommended Kingdom, and it's a good one. Don't make me cry. I just want to say that Kingdom is not only a good zombie flick, because it also goes into the reason for people turning into zombies and everything like that. It also shows us a very brilliant leader at the helm, taking charge and leading his country. Not only just like in terms of like, he has multi-pronged approaches like to things, where first he needs to settle the infection and preventing it from spreading, making sure people are protected, but he also makes sure people have food to eat. He makes sure that the poorest people are taken care of and the richest people are not going wild with their greed. All of that stuff just feels like something we want in the real world now.
Yeah, you know, Sherlyn, I think strong leaders only exist in fiction right now.
It's so sad.
It's so sad.
It's
kind of
but
sad. Yeah.
I know. So that's another reason to watch it. Go for the zombies, but stay for the excellent strategy and leadership of this crown prince, whom I love. Again, played by Choo Ji-hoon, my baby. Well, Jess is my baby also. Jess, what is your pick?
Well, I've been doing a little off-screen reading. So Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo. I think that's how you say her name.
Okay.
Ninth House. It's like this magic Yale dark kind of mystery story with a strong woman at the center of it. It's pretty enjoyable so far. I'm really just starting, but I'm into it. I am happy to dive into a new book anytime. It's such a good feeling. Like, you know, halfway through a really good book, how you're just like, oh, I never want this to end. I could do this for hours.
I do that.
Yeah, but like, it takes a while to get there. So like, I'm on that climb toward that point, but it's going to happen. I can feel it with this book. So it's pretty good so far. Yeah.
Nice. What's it about? You said magic, Yale, dark Yale. So it's basically about people finding magic?
Yeah, there's this woman, there's a secret society, and there's murder and darkness. And it's pretty cool.
Fun stuff.
All right. Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com, at the Slash Filmcast there. You can bet I'll never be talking about World War Z again, although we did review it, so go check out that review.
Oi. You can find a much lovelier person, Jess Condit, online at
at Jess Condit on Twitter, 2 T's, and Jess L. Condit on Instagram.
You should definitely check out Jess's Instagram. It's got a lot of good food pictures. Meanwhile, If you want very boring content and a lot of very dry humor, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts and feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on any podcast platform, including Spotify. With that, we're out, and stay safe, everyone.